Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
Whatever happened to predictability? The milkman, the pit boy, evening TV.
This is better. Second time around.
Actually, wrong one.
Was it?
Second, second time around is Step by Step. I was doing Full House, sir.
My bad. I heard some TGIF jingles and I just went into one.
Yeah, it would be everywhere you look, everywhere you look,
there's a
hand to hold on to.
Everywhere you look, yes, that's I can understand your misunderstanding because a lot of those songs sound exactly the same.
It's true.
I often will get that confused with Family Matters, which anyway, yeah, my 10-year-old's obsessed with Family Matters with a Full House at the moment, so we've been watching a lot of it at the house.
I fucking love Family Matters. It's a rare condition
in this day and age
to read any good news on the newspaper page.
Love and tradition of the grand design.
Some people say
it's even harder to find.
But there must be some magic
inside
these gentle walls.
Because all I see is a tower of dreams. Real love first and out of every scene. Days go by.
You gotta admit that TGIF did have some banger theme songs.
Absolutely, they were fantastic. They were good enough to really just kind of stick in your head, maybe forever. Although the one that I remember the most, interestingly enough, is the show that I probably watched the least, which was Perfect Strangers.
Perfect Strangers was a flagship of TGIF, and it originally existed outside of TGIF, so it
didn't... that makes sense. Well, it also as I was prime TV watching age, the reason I watched it the least is because I watched it every time it was on, but it eventually went off the air in a more rapidly than the other series.
Yeah, I mean, it's Perfect Strangers, but you know, the weird thing about Perfect Strangers is people don't really realize that show was on for like 10 years.
Oh yeah, Perfect Strangers is super long. I think it hit every jump shark moment you could.
Yes, and it was like they redesigned the show like 3 times in the first 4 years, but they knew they had something. They had magic, the magic of Mark Lynn Baker and Bronson Pinchot.
It's true. You know, actually someone, I'm going to try to remember it. Cause I actually wanted to write it down, but someone said, you could have recast that guy as Bronson Pinchot and no one would have missed the beat. And I was like, that is fuck. Oh, it's bugging. It's going to bug the shit out of me. It was, Data.
Oh yeah. 100%.
He's like, you could have had Bronson Pinchot play Data. No questions asked.
You know, I wrote an article years ago for the Planet Arbitrary website, for those who remember that existing. but it was basically on like the alternative casting for Star Trek: The Next Generation, like the people who could have been cast who are like on the short list for being casted.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember saying, like, you know, it's interesting enough that like we know these people and we know what they brought to the show. Excuse me. But if you cast anyone else in these roles, you'd be like, no. Bronson Pinchot was the perfect Data. Like no one would have been better than Bronson Pinchot's Data. And people would have been like, Brent Spiner, the guy from Night Court? No. You know, that's what they would have been like. And it's interesting to think of it that way. But Bronson Pinchot.
People talk about Star Trek and that's what they said. And I was like, that's absolutely fucking, that's 100%. Bronson Pinchot would have been a fucking great Data.
It's weird that you bring that up because I was just watching an episode of Third Rock from the Sun where Bronson Pinchot shows up. So
nice. Yeah, my favorite bit in that entire series is when fucking Shatner shows up and he's talking to the commander.
Lithgow.
And he's like, how was your fight? And he's like, it was eventful. There was, I saw something on the wing, and then fucking Lithgow's just like, me too!
Yeah.
Yeah, I was fucking great. I was laughing my ass off when I first saw that.
That is my favorite Twilight Zone episode, the terror at 10,000 feet or whatever it is, 30,000 feet.
Yes, the fucking gremlin.
The fucking gremlin on the wing, man. The fucking gremlin.
You know what? You know what? He's going goblin mode.
Well, that's the there was a tweet I read recently where it was like, you know what I like? I like the Twilight Zone episodes with no morals to them, where it's just like, welcome to the Twilight Zone. Some fucked up shit is going to happen. And it's, there's no moral to it. It's just like, what if there was a gremlin on the wing of your plane and no one believed you? Fucked up, yeah. Right? Welcome to the Twilight Zone.
I do like those as well. I feel those bits, I mean, I don't think they're superior to the ones with morals. I like the ones with morals. However, I do enjoy, I find, here it is. The random occurrences feel a lot more cosmic horror to me, where it's just like, you were in the wrong fucking place, bro. Like, you didn't do anything wrong. It's not your fault. You were just in the wrong fucking place when some weird shit happened.
Gremlin on the wing of on the plane is a perfect example of Lovecraftian horror of some guy sitting on a plane. Like, just imagine, okay, don't watch the episode. Just imagine reading it as a Lovecraft story where the guy's talking about being on a plane and he looks out the window and sees this horrific thing out there. And every time he tries to warn someone about it, they look out there and there's nothing there. So it's like, is it in my mind? Am I going insane? It is that is perfect Lovecraftian horror.
Yes, absolutely. I love that shit.
Yeah. It's not like Elder God mythos style.
My favorite Lovecraft, like, I actually realized the other day, like, I mean, as much as I think Cthulhu is dope and cool, and like Shoggoths are dope and cool, all of my favorite Lovecraft stories, none of them involve the mythos.
No, I like Dagon. Dagon's pretty mythos.
Dagon's sweet, but I mean, my favorite Dagon thing is when Conan the Barbarian fights him.
Conan fights Dagon. Well, Conan doesn't fight Lovecraft's Dagon. Conan fights the Assyrian god Dagon.
Same diff,
different fish, man.
Yeah, just different. You're trying to tell me that there's two big fishmen live under the sea, have a crazy cult, both named Dagon, different guys.
Oh my god! The Little Mermaid is Lovecraftian horror. Under the sea.
Oh, that's good.
How does Ariel know what do they eat? What do the mermaids eat? Do they eat fish? Do they eat the fish that can talk, or is there like a subgroup of fish that can't talk that are bred only to be eaten?
I'm fairly certain they eat kelp.
But can they live on kelp alone? They probably need some protein of some kind.
No, fish biology is weird. Sometimes some do, some don't.
But it depends on if the mermaids are more fish than man or more man than fish. Or if it's a 50-50, you know, they still need protein.
Also, I mean, they could possibly even be photosynthetic. There's a couple underwater animals that are photosynthetic, like that are not plants, which is pretty wild.
I don't think so. I think that they actually eat other fish. I'm just going to be honest, because most fish eat other fish.
The mermaids?
Yes. Maybe the mermaids have like some sort of filter system in their mouths, like a whale, like a baleen.
Mm.
So they just filter the krill.
They just eat microorganisms. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, the microorganisms in the Disney universe are like, oh no, we're being eaten by a mermaid. Sucks it right through.
Do you think even the microorganisms are sentient in the Disney universe?
Well, of course. I mean, if you have crabs that are crabs are sentient, and you have just fish that are sentient, that goes to show you that different types of biologies are sentient. So therefore,
actually, you know what? Let's deep lore Little Mermaid for just a second here. Technically, the only sentient aquatic life that talk that you see in that entire movie are Sebastian and Flounder. No other fish talks, as far as I know.
The little seahorse, the announcer seahorse guy, he talks.
True. Okay, and they're all in Triton's kingdom.
Yeah, yeah. You don't see anything outside of Triton's kingdom. Oh well, the Flotsam and Jetsam talk.
Do they? I thought they just made noises.
No, they talk.
Okay, well, that's still Triton's kingdom. So perhaps, let me throw this out there. Perhaps there's like a base level enchantment where King Triton slash the merfolk can gift sentience to specific fish that they decide.
I cast a spell.
Right. Like they cast a spell. So like not every crab in the Little Mermaid universe is a sentient talking crab with the Jamaican accent, just Sebastian.
That's horrendous. So, could you imagine being Sebastian the crab just scuttling along on the bottom of the floor, then all of a sudden granted sentience? Speaking of Lovecraftian horror.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It's horrific.
It's horrific. Oh no, man. I see through the eyes of the people. It's killing me in the inside.
Yeah, like not only did they give me the curse of being sentient, they made me a slave.
I understand my own mortality. I've done nothing with my life except scuttle.
my Jamaican accent is horrible. I sounded Indian. Well,
mine's just as bad too. I try to do it in a funny way and instead of trying to do it like legit, because I feel like trying to do a legit Jamaican accent makes me racist. But doing a funny Jamaican accent, I think most people are okay with that. Yeah.
I don't know if I agree on the the racist thing, but maybe.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know. I guess it's not my part. Guess it's not my place to say, really.
Not your place to say. No, not so whatsoever. But welcome to Game Classy. I am your host, Joe, and with me is always my co-host, Steve.
Hello, hello, hello.
Today we're talking about the TGIF lineup and really what is the best TGIF show? Was it Family Matters or was it Perfect Strangers?
See, so both of them have terrible final like arcs, you know, where Family Matters became the Urkel show. Yeah, and then Perfect Strangers had the same thing where like Balky got weirder and weirder.
Yeah, well that's Flanderfication, I believe is what they call it in the TV trope world, where it's like you lean into your stereotype.
I see.
Yeah, so like how Flanders started off as just like a normal dude, all of a sudden became like the super religious nut job.
Yeah. Well, he was like the overly friendly neighbor. I see. Yeah.
And then so that's like what happens is that people like, I like this aspect of this character, so those characters lean into it. A great example is Kevin on The Office. I don't know if you've ever watched The Office, but Kevin on The Office.
I know he dropped his chili.
Yes, he did drop the chili. But he started off as just kind of like an unassuming accountant in the office, and then he just became like dumber and dumber and dumber as the seasons went on. So much like that, Balky started off as just this weird guy from Europe, but they kept leaning in really hard into the weird stuff. So you think by year 9 of being in America, he may have assimilated a little bit better, but instead he assimilated worse.
I see. He reverse assimilated.
He reverse assimilated. Same thing with Urkel. Urkel was just was like a weird kid next door, and all of a sudden he became like this crazy genius inventor who created a serum that turned him into Stefan Urkel.
Stefan Urkel, yes, and canonically went to space, and also one of the Halloween episodes was canon.
I don't doubt it. I don't really think that we should talk about the canon of TGIF.
Excuse me, Joe. This is the year of our Malort 2022. And that means that canon is the only thing that is sacrosanct and the only thing that matters.
The only thing that matters, the only thing that's sacrosanct, the only thing that actually TV producers don't care about.
Yes, canon. We almost worship and bow at the feet of canon.
It's true. And then these producers are like, hand wave, no such thing.
That was funny. I always tell people when they're getting all like up in their grits about canon, I'm like, yeah, just whatever. Just be like, that didn't happen. Like, yeah, no, that didn't happen.
Except for Dave Filoni, because Dave Filoni is the only person who's like, but the canon. And they're like, Dave, you wrote outside the canon like 6 times, but I turned it into my canon. You're breaking my canon. I do like Dave Filoni, but no one loves Dave Filoni more than Dave Filoni. He really Filoni's himself. Yeah, very much true. So I did want to talk about the biggest gaming news of all time, Steve.
The biggest Sonic the Hedgehog news. 2 movie coming out.
I'm talking tabletop gaming, not
my bad.
Not that crazy Sonic the Hedgehog that's only saved by Jim Carrey's crazy ass impressions.
You know what? He's really, really good in that movie. So I'm sure he'll be really good in the second one.
When isn't Jim Carrey really good, in all honesty?
Mm.
Maybe that movie 23, but...
Here's the thing. That's like sort of like it's is the movie bad, and is Jim Carrey good enough to save the bad movie? So I would say Jim Carrey is fine, and I called him Jim Curry too, which was really funny. Jim Carrey was fine in The Number 23. The Number 23 was just an awful movie.
Yeah, like Nick Caged it. Is what it was.
Yeah, he Nick Cage. There's no amount of saving that movie, but like it's worth watching to see Jim Carrey be really weird.
Exactly. Okay, so the big news. Come on, big news. It's 30 years in the making at this point. My God.
He's dead, Jim.
It is the squats. Are back.
Oh, the squats. I thought you wanted to go with cornucopia or cornopia.
Well, that's enough.
I was hoping that you were gonna launch into cornopia.
So, you know, I don't know what's weirder, the fact that GW brought back the squats, or if cornopia coming back may have influenced the squats coming back. Because Games Workshop is like, there's no way you could bring back something that dead. We're going to do it first. So they brought me. Yeah. So it, one or the other, I'm not 100% sure on that, but let's talk about squats first. So, right. There's not much to talk about in this case. Games Workshop on April 1st, which I believe is a baller move, said and did a little video that was like, we're bringing back the squats. And everyone was like, April 1st, Games Workshop, come on. but some people were like, you know, that was a really expensive April Fool's video. Like that was a lot of stuff went into that one. Maybe it's not true, but everyone was like, no, it's April 1st. Don't trust anything you see on April 1st. But then like April 2nd, Games Workshop was like, you think it was a fucking joke, you pieces of shit. You're gonna buy anything that we put out, won't you? You're gonna buy squats. And they like show a squat model, and people are like, oh my fucking God, and we're like masturbating all over. They started drawing sexy pictures of the squat, you know, like the amount of Rule 34 that's gonna come out from that model is amazing.
That's great.
I really want to get a nude model of that squat and just sculpt a huge dong that just drags between its legs. That's what I want to do. An alpha cock. Like, so it's like, instead of alpha strike, and you get alpha cock. That's what
you get alpha cock.
Yeah.
They're Alphaeus? No, Alcacius.
They're calling them the Leagues of Votan, I think is what it is. I'm just like, oh, whatever. I know you just can't call it squats. We get it. I don't understand why they didn't go with Demiurg. I thought they already had that trademark, but they might not. I liked that. That was a fine one too.
Also, why can't they call them squats?
Because they don't do any of that. There's no Eldar anymore. There's no
Right. The Eldar and Eldar, they're called like Drukhari or some shit now.
Well, that's
right?
That's the Dark Eldar or the Drukhari, and the Eldar are the Aeldar.
I see.
Yeah. And then you got Astra Militarum instead of Imperial Guard, and Adeptus Astartes, all that fun stuff. You can't call anything by what it's called, Steve. However, these guys will be.
I'm clearly the idiot here.
Yes. However, what I do want to point out more than anything is that Games Workshop did not even acknowledge that the paint job on that squat that they released is the same paint job that Rackham used on their AT-43 Carmens. And I found that to be really, really disturbing. I know I might be the only person in the existence of mankind who made that connection in their brain.
You might also be the only person in existence who remembers that AT-43 was a game.
Yes. Well, no, people love that game. But yes, the big guerrilla troopers, the Carmens, if you look at them, some of them are painted in that exact paint scheme that they used on the squat. So
you know, I'm surprised I didn't notice that because I actually played the Carmens. They were fun as hell.
Yeah. So there you go. I mean, you're just like, a game is passed out of my purview. I shall not pay any attention to it for the next existence.
That's also true. It's like my object permanence for a game is like, once I stop seeing it, the game ceases to exist.
Yes, exactly. Oh, God, Steve, stop paying attention to us. We stopped existing. What is this? This is some sort of horrifying state of existence that only exists in Steve's mind. Yeah. There's not much.
That's Sebastian the Crab comes on. He's like, welcome to Steve's mind. Everything here fucking sucks. You're here forever.
You are here forever. Welcome to Steve's subconsciousness. Yes, exactly. There's not much else to say about it. I thought that the April Fool's announcement and then like saying no, it's real on April 2nd was pretty funny. Especially because it's an army that like it was just well done humor playing with a trope of an army that that has not existed for 30 years.
It makes sense because I mean they've had to. Workshop's clearly been taken, like, I mean, let's be honest, like, I mean, yeah, their stock has dropped and stuff, and like, you know, their sales are quote unquote down, but like they're still so fucking profitable, like,
yeah,
with the capitalism number no go line no go up, why not, why line no go up with that mindset? Yeah, they've taken a beating, in terms of like overall like sales and success, their market penetration and market share is still absolutely fucking unrivaled, not even close to anything else.
Same
and
then market penetration again.
Market penetration.
Nice.
So they've clearly been like, well, we need a way to print some cash. And how do they figure it out? Well, the old standby of another box set with Space Marines isn't going to do it this time, fellas. We need something bigger. And some dude was just like, what about squats? And they were like, yes, that guy. It's finally time to dust those off the shelf.
And they're like, it's time. They like, and then they all like, there's like two guys pull out a key and they put in the keys together and they turn it at the same time, which flips open the thing. And then they hit the big red button that says squats.
Oh, and then there's chanting. Someone's got an old book and he's like, Domine. Domine Iotoi Requiem, Squaticus, Squaticus Requiem. Yeah, exactly. And there's little choir boys with giant trumpets like playing.
And then the door opens up with the mist and there's like an old Baba Ali sculpt and they're like, this won't do. And they just like flick it with their hand.
my thing was it just pans to an office and like an overweight dude just like pouring with sweat, just like looks over his computer and he sees something on the screen, just says squat equals N, and he just goes and he presses Y.
Yes, exactly. And then it's the bunch of other fat fanboys sitting around their computers, and they see it, they're like, oh, Jesus Christ. Christ, you're coming back. You know, all I have to say is, as Steve knows and many listeners of this podcast know, Joe has been a promoter of squats for the last 30 years. So, or I should say at least the last 20 years. So I think I get all dibs on gatekeeping for the squats. I don't know if you would agree with that, Steve.
I mean, you have an old squat army, which means you're now in the prime position to be the coolest dude at the game store.
I'm always the coolest dude at the game store, Steve, and that doesn't take that much. Except for Jimmy McCool, nothing could beat him. No one is cooler than him.
I was gonna say, what about Jimmy McCool and his heated rival from the store across the town, Nikki McCool?
Oh, their games are epic. They never end in a handshake. There's never any GG.
It's always BG.
It's always BG. There's not much on the squats. I'm sure it'll be fine. Another funny thing is that the actual model themselves are as tall as the old Space Marine models, the old Space Marine plastics. So they're not really squats if they're the same size as Firstborn Space Marine.
I would be so bold as to say, obviously I didn't see the announcement, so I didn't know. You sent me a meme with You sent me a meme with the picture, and I was like, oh, that's a cool model. But, I would actually say that this is a huge detriment, or not maybe a detriment, but maybe like a knock against it, is I thought it was a Necromunda model.
Yeah.
Because it just looks like a human. Like, it just looks like a Necromunda dude in like fat, chonky power armor. Like, I had no possible way that I could have told, you know, like predicted that was a squat.
You couldn't predict that it was a squat?
Yeah, I couldn't tell. I think it was the first thing I said. I was like, oh, that model's cool. Is it a new Necromunda one? I think it was like the first thing I said. And you're like, no, it's a squat. And I'm like, what?
Well, they did have two squats for the Necromunda. So it's not, the squats have been around for the last few years. They're just now announcing that there's going to be a full army. Woo!
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, honestly, like if you want us, and you know, feel, I think that the fucking fake squats from, Mantic looked great.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, it's the same concept. I mean,
I mean, I really think they look good. Like, if you want a squad army, they're right there. I mean, and then, hey, you know, when the squads have rules, if you want a cheap squad army, you're going to have one that's going to be, I don't know, I think Mantic's probably a fourth of the price at Workshop now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's, they're way cheaper. So
and they just showed their new the new Infernal Orcs sculpts. I gotta say, Mantic sculpts have gone a really fucking long way. They look really good, and they keep the same cheap price.
They have they, you know, I'm not, people do still play I don't see Warpath as much, but I do see King's War quite a bit still, which I find I don't not that I find fascinating. It's not like it's War Gods of Egyptus, but it's
we got messaged War Gods of Egyptus games in progress pictures.
Yes, we did. People, you know, they still, and you were schooled in that there is no Norse gods of Egyptus,
which completely shocks me, because like I got, you know what happened? I'm gonna say I was right, but I was Mandela affected.
You go, well, it's the Mandela effect, except it's War Gods of Egyptus effect.
Yeah, so that's what, whenever someone calls you out on something you're wrong about, you'd be like, no, well, when in my home dimension, I was right, so technically I'm not wrong.
I do find it that quite funny in that. The whole thing with that, just because it's Chris Fitzpatrick sculpts one model a year, let's be honest. So for him to put out a third range, probably not going to happen.
Yeah, there's sweet though. I like that stuff. And then another new thing came out for Conquest. They did their Lost Legion, or like the undead. They did their undead.
Yes,
and their undead are very cool. They have a very cool and a unique look for their undead, which I was pretty happy about. They look like they're dead dudes, but their armor has the kind of like aesthetic of like Talos from Jason and the Argonauts. So they look very like Greek bronzed armor, but they did kind of a patina on them. So they actually did their own, like they did their own spin on their undead, and I think they look really fucking dope.
I don't remember what the Jason the Argonauts theme is, but I keep on thinking in my head it's the theme from Clash of the Titans, which is an amazing theme.
I can't remember the theme for it. Jason the Argonauts is one of the Jason the Argonauts doesn't have a very catchy theme. It's a very like,
it's gonna go like Jason and the Argonauts across space and time.
You're thinking of Jason
and the Argonauts.
No, like, sir, no. You are thinking of Ulysses 2023 or whatever. Ulysses travels all the galaxies. That's what you were thinking of.
I mean, it could very well be, but I could say Jason and the Argonauts.
I watched an episode of the old Conan cartoon. Man, that show was bad.
Conan, the adventurer.
He's the greatest warrior ever.
And he's like, well, the best part of the Conan cartoon is when he's got a shield and he has a sidekick that comes out of his shield, and the sidekick, of course, has got to eat pomegranates all the time.
Yes, and I think the sidekick in that, I believe his sidekick in that show is the character who's always wrong. I'm not sure.
Kind of. No. Well, I mean, his traveling companion is always the Phoenix on the shield. But what I liked about that show was that he never had like the same traveling companion. So like sometimes you'd have the Nubian guy. Sometimes you'd have like the berserker dwarf. Norse guy.
Tons of awesome side characters. But wasn't his sidekick? Because I can't remember, because it's been a while. But like if anyone's not aware of this, one of the old like rules for standards and practices for doing a cartoon show for kids, and this is a real thing, one of your characters had to fill this archetype where they would be the voice of dissent and they had to always be wrong.
I'm sure, like, that they usually play around with that.
That was a real thing, and they would always have to lose to the majority and then also be wrong. It's an actual thing. And so like that's why I'm gonna loop this back, because this is a cartoon that I'm sure everyone here knows, the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon. The reason that the class Cavalier was used and not Paladin is because that character is the I'm always wrong character in the group, and you couldn't have the paladin be the character who fits that role.
And get a shield. Like, what are you gonna do with your fucking shield? Okay, come on.
The power gaming, you have the shield be your holy symbol. So then you have your shield plus holy symbol in your left hand, and then you have your sword in your right hand. So you don't ever have to sacrifice holding anything to always have your holy symbol equipped.
Acrobat. I didn't actually mention that last cast when we were talking about Conquest, and we were talking about some of those games. Actually, Mantic was at Adepticon as well. Conquest had a bunch of, they actually had a pretty strong presence at Adepticon. And I think that was because a lot of games did not put out heavy presences. Since Conquest didn't have a tournament, they really focused a lot of their attention on doing demo games. And they had a lot of people playing demos, which I think the
game is growing in popularity. I actually had a couple people who just like messaged me out of the blue. They're like, "Hey man, so you playing Conquest?" And I was like, "No, are you?" And they're like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Really?" And they're like, "Yeah, like we got to play." I mean, unfortunately they're in Colorado, so I don't have a reason to like jump out and grab a Conquest army, but like there's apparently like a 10-man play group that just like popped into existence after Adepticon at the store. And I was like, "No shit."
Yeah.
The game is apparently really good. I loved the sculpts. I really liked the look of the figures. I liked that they were a little bit bigger than your standard fantasy size. I liked the game scale, like the amount of figures you need. And it's a good one. It's one of those games where it's like, just like any other minis game, if you're lucky enough to have a play group of people playing that game, you should play it. I would recommend it to anyone who, if you've got a play group playing it, go for it.
Yeah. I don't think I mentioned also that Arena Rex was there as well, hucking their wares, and they were doing a great
Arena
job.
Arena Rex.
That's what they need. They need a damn theme song. We should write one for them.
Arena Rex, they gotta get on, they gotta get their social media presence more oomphed.
More oomphed?
Yes, that's what I would say. Their social media presence is lacking. That's why if I had one critique on Arena Rex, it is that their internet presence is lacking. That's all.
Yeah, well, they could hire you. You could be their internet slog.
I don't think that would be a conflict of interest.
I also think that you'd be terrible to be a face man for a company on social media.
Well, no, see, that's the thing, because when you're a face man for social media, you never actually show your face.
Well, I know, but I mean, like, I do know that what you generally put out for social media, if you were in charge of someone's social media, and they really don't want probably a lot of what you'd post out there as a official spokesman for that group.
Look, everyone wants to randomly see butt shots from films that aren't supposed to have butt shots in them.
It's true. With Arena Rex. And then the other news that I wanted to bring up today, since Steve already spoiled it, was Cronopia's back, boy. We're back.
I didn't mean to spoil it. I thought it was going to be your. I thought you were going to pull the old switcheroo. Everyone's going to expect you to talk about the workshop, and you were going to talk about Cronopia.
I'm not that clever. No, Cronopia is back with all new sculpts. I think some of them are slightly older, like some guys had done. Let's just get to the thing with Cronopia. For those who don't remember, Cronopia was an alternative fantasy game that was released by Target Games. I think it was a different game before it was Target.
Because Target was the same company that made Mutant Chronicles, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think it was Target. So Target put out Cronopia back in the 1990s. Alternative fantasy game, a lot of cool, not real stereotypical fantasy races. So you had elves, dwarves, men, or orcs and demons, but they weren't quite what you expected. Yes, dwarves lived underground, but they were like these really crazy clans that were like animal totems and stuff like that. They had cavalry. Elves all rode lizards, kind of like dark elves, but they were all like crystals and fucking like it was huge armor and crazy stuff like that. The orcs were black bloods, which were Middle Eastern, which makes them super racist. But I'm not, you know, let's just say that they were a unique design for orcs.
I mean, they don't look anything like humans.
I know, but you still don't want to have them wearing like a classic Arabic style dress, because that's kind of on the racist side. That's like when you have savage orcs wearing like, you know, African garb, and you're just like, that's not right.
I think it is important to have, I say it would be important to have culturally perhaps inspired, but not copied.
Yeah.
Because every people ever were wearing, you know, rags and bones. At one point, all peoples were wearing that.
Yeah.
So like, I would not consider a character wearing rags and bones.
However, if it is, if they're dressed like the stereotypical African character in racist 1930s cartoons,
yes,
then they're racist.
If they have a specific, like, wait, I recognize that look. You know, it's like if you put someone in a kimono. Like, yeah. Kimono is a very specifically cultured thing. Like that, you know. But it's obviously a real thing. It's not, you know, it's not like putting someone in clothes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, interesting. Yeah. You know, like, what is it? The Trade Federation? But sir, is that regal?
Regal? Yeah, that's yeah, pretty racist. Anyway, Cronopia was around for about most of the 90s. It was a small game. You only really needed like maybe 20 figures to play, fairly cheap to play. It did get bogged down when people tried to play bigger games. It really didn't work with that system. The rule books were super cool. The lore was super cool. The rule books were all illustrated by Adrian Smith, who does a lot of fantasy art, especially Games Workshop stuff.
And he did a lot of Mutant Chronicle stuff too.
Yeah, he did all the Mutant Chronicle stuff. It was around 5th, 6th edition, 40K stuff, like style of artwork. Just fantastic stuff. And I really liked the lore. I thought the lore was excellent. A little Age of Sigmar-ish, a little grim dark for fantasy, but I do appreciate it. But it went away in the 2000s. Target Games kind of folded up. It got bought. I think the parent company ended up buying that bought it was owns like half of the Conan IP at this point. Mm. So yeah, they have that. And you know, there's always been like people were like, let's bring back Cronopia. And I think there was a rule book attempt in the early 2000s, like for like a redux with the old metals. I think Prince of something in Ireland owns the molds for Cronopia right now. The old molds, it's Prince of something. I for the life of me, I don't remember it, but they own all the molds for Cronopia and Mutant Chronicles, what the Warzone, right? That's what it is.
Yeah, Warzone.
Yeah, they own all the molds for that. So I don't know if you could still get them from Prince of Ireland.
Warzone. There's like a weird thing because I know Modiphius is distributing a bunch of Mutant Chronicles stuff now too.
Yeah, but Warzone might be different than Mutant Chronicles.
Oh right, yeah, they can make this little because I think it's Siege. I think it's just Siege of the Citadel stuff for Modiphius.
Yeah.
Well, another game that I really would have snap bought if they used the old shitty models.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I think is like for me, like when I it's like the opposite of a video game. Like when they do a remaster of a video game, that's exciting because I'm like, yeah, cool, they're gonna update it to, you know, modern graphics and modern controls. Awesome. So like then you get absolute bangers like Resident Evil 2 remake. Which is still somewhat recent, but like, I mean, that game is fucking great. That game is a fucking 10 out of 10. It's so good. Phenomenal remake. And, you know, obviously the graphics are fucking top of the line. Controls are great. Super good game. Really fun. But with like old tabletop games, the only thing that I'm interested in them like fucking with for like a reboot is almost always literally just rules, because the older rule sets are always like they're missing situations that kind of came up, or like they have a lot of ambiguity. Like clean up rules ambiguity, but like if I want to play Hero Quest, I want those chunky chubbo models. I want the fucking gargoyle with his arms out and the goofy face. Like that's what I want. I don't want like a dope looking modernized World of Warcraft style gargoyle. Like yeah. That's not what I'm looking for if I'm playing Hero Quest.
Yes, I think that there is a dividing line though with that, because many gamers like myself, you people who've just, let's say, have been around for gaming for like, let's say, older than 10 years or let's say 5 years, want that old school retro feel to it. However, many new people who have gotten into gaming lately, and most of their experience with miniatures is from Reaper Bones and the Dungeons & Dragons Nolzers, they probably want the World of Warcraft style big pauldrons and you know, really crappy poses. Not crappy poses, but dynamic poses style, where we're like, nah, we don't want that. Like, you're gonna paint those minis, but you're not.
Yeah, for me, that's the thing. It's like I want that like old. So like, I mean, yeah, I can go and get a copy of old ass Hero Quest, but I mean, that's That's an arm and a leg to find an incomplete version. You know, yeah. I'd much rather just pay like, you know, I mean, and even if it's, even if it needed to be boutique priced because they're like, yeah, we're reprinting this, like we're reissuing the original as like a special release and we're going to fucking gouge you for it. And it's just yeah. like, yeah, I mean, I'll still pay that because it's going to be a brand new copy of the game I played and loved so much from the 90s. Like in that instance, I'm okay with paying the extra. It, it feels, I don't know what it may, if it makes any sense, but it feels less shitty. Like, let's just say, I don't know what the price for fucking Hero Quest is now, but let's just say $200 is what the eBay price
$200 for, okay. for a complete set. Yeah.
Okay. So the eBay price for HeroQuest is $200. If they came out with a reissue new in-box HeroQuest, that's the same thing with maybe just some rules cleanup for $200, I'd pay that. It yeah. feels less shitty to buy it in that circumstance than it does to like buy like a used copy for that much money.
Absolutely. But so, but speaking of Cronopia, the new Kickstarter that got released by Patrick Thorsten is his name. It's a Kickstarter. It's on Kickstarter right now. It's a physical minis Kickstarter. So it's not like a 3D printed one. It has 200 backers. It still has not made its goal yet. It's been up for a while, which I find, I guess I don't find interesting. I find that completely normal for where it's supposed to be. It's almost there. Its goal was 45,000 about. It's made 38,000. So it's close.
Yeah, it'll make it.
Yeah. It's also coming from Cologne, Germany. So it's a Euro game now. I believe the
Cologne.
Cologne. And the models are not that chunky style that we loved so well from the old game. They are actually new updated sculpts. They're not bad, but they're not like
they've definitely got the feel of the old models though. Like that demon's a chonker.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It feels like the older models, just a little bit of a newer update on them. They're probably yeah,
that's also I'm cool with that middle ground too, where it's just like where you look at it and you're like, okay, this isn't the same as the old model, but man, does it really feel like the old model?
Yeah. I think that the models actually are probably going to come in resin and they're probably going to be 3D printed at the whatever factory. They're not going to do 3D printed stuff. They're not going to release the STLs for it, but they're probably sculpting them in 3D and just printing them out at some sort of factory. The game's not that expensive, especially if you want to play it the way that it's intended. If you want to like, I want everything. Yeah, it's going to cost you a chunk of change, but I don't think it's.
No, it looked like it was a really, really affordable price for the 2-player starter. Like, and also I assume that the game will also be just as shitty scaled up as before. So it will definitely be inexpensive because you'll need, you know, a nominal amount of figures.
Yeah. You really only need to play the original one. I think you really only needed like about 20 figures and even less if you were playing something bigger like Calvary.
True story. I've heard nothing but positive. Speaking about games getting smaller, I don't know if you're aware, but like Age of Sigmar 3rd edition, games are tiny compared to 2nd edition, just the amount of figures on the table. And it seems like most people have really taken to that. It seems like a lot of people really like the smaller amount of figures.
Yeah, I mean, I think in games that are not ranked, the smaller amount of figures, the better.
I agree.
I mean, I think that's just common sense. Most people enjoy smaller games. Games Workshop has been mostly focusing on smaller size games as opposed to Age of Sigmar and 40K, which are much bigger games. It's not that big anymore. I think a lot of that big stuff that you see is like when I'm looking at like, oh, how am I going to paint this Blood Angel figure? And then I type in like, Blood Angels, and I see people's like 15,000 point armies, and I'm like, you don't need that much figures. You don't need that many figures. You're not
right. Yeah, I mean they've fallen too deep into the itis.
Yes. By the way, I also looked it up. It's Prince August figures had the original Cronopia models. They do not right now. They may have lost that, which is part of the reason why there's a Kickstarter for it. But they still do have the old Warzone models. So if you'd like to get some of your Bauhaus Megacorp, those figures available for you. You can get your Blitzer Sergeant or your Venusian Rangers.
Finally.
These models are awful. Jesus fucking Christ. I'm looking at them right now. I'm just like, man, these are bad. You can look at yourself. Prince August Minis or princeaugust.ie. Is that Ireland? I think that's Ireland.
Oh yeah,
I think it's in Kilnamartiria, Macroom County, Cork. Macroom.
What?
Yeah.
You just made up a bunch of words.
Kilnamartiria. It's Irish. I'm going to do the, let's do the Irish accent. I'm from Kilnamartiria in Macroom County, Cork.
Ooh,
it's a little Scottish there. I was turning into.
You're allowed to do that accent.
I'm really not, because I'm not Irish at all, but I could probably pass. Oh, I'm Irish passing.
I thought you were.
No Irish whatsoever. Yeah, I was turning into Scrooge McDuck as I was doing that. So let's.
Then I'll be Flintheart Glamgold.
Who was South African? And they never really go into that too much.
Oh, well, I mean, they probably don't want
apartheid.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you know, there's a.
Yeah.
But you know, you're saying he's South African and he wears Scottish clothes.
Yeah, well, he pretends to be Scottish because of Scrooge McDuck.
Ah, right.
He wants to be like Scrooge McDuck. Yeah. No, he's. I think he's also trying to escape war crimes. From
that seems likely.
Yeah. That's
likely. Yeah. Flintheart Glamgold.
Flintheart Glamgold. He's South African, like the bad guys in Lethal Weapon 2. Yeah. Diplomatic immunity.
Is that a line from the new series?
No, it should be.
The new series is really good.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic. I've watched the entire thing multiple times with my kids.
Yeah, the new DuckTales is really good. Like if you were a fan of the original DuckTales, I found even as an adult, I really enjoyed it. They did a good job of they did a good job of like making the show good, but also putting in little like rewarding nods to people our age who probably watched it as kids.
Oh yeah, it's and you know what the thing is then you're like you watch it and you're like, oh man, I really like to go back and watch these old episodes of DuckTales. And then you go back and watch the old episodes of DuckTales and you're like, oh, this is terrible.
Yeah, no, it's children's entertainment. Like going back, there's very few shows that fully hold up like as a series when you watch them. I'd say like one I'd say is pretty inarguable is Batman the Animated Series. Probably the best children's show ever made because it's like,
what about Hammerman?
Like, Hammerman?
Yeah.
I've never heard of Hammerman.
It was MC Hammer's short-lived cartoon series that was on Saturday morning.
I didn't know it was called Hammerman.
It
I
was. MC Hammer, MC Hammer would do his thing, and then when he was needed, he would transform into Hammerman.
That is great. I did not remember that it was called Hammerman. I remember that he could fly with his pants.
Of course.
But I did not remember it was called Hammerman.
I believe it was back-to-back with Kid and Play's cartoon as well. But
Batman the Animated Series is just so good. Da-da. Like it covers like actual like. The first thing about Batman series that's so good is like, one, it covers like actual heavy topics, which is like not normally a thing done in like kids cartoons, and two, basically everything you think, like you the listener right now, basically I'll say basically everything that you think is really cool about Batman and like the Batman world right now is probably from the fucking Batman the Animated Series. Like Mr. Freeze having the motivation to save his sick wife, Batman the Animated Series. Harley Quinn's existence, Batman the Animated Series. Making Clayface a tragic villain, Batman the Animated Series. like all of the stuff that like you know about characters is pretty much from Batman the Animated Series.
But what about Bruce Wayne saying, "You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts."
I mean, that's pretty dope. That's pretty dope too.
Yeah.
Also, I think the Mad Hatter is. I think the Mad Hatter is from Batman the Animated Series as well.
Well, not originally. He was an actual Batman villain for a long time.
Was he? Okay. I couldn't remember because I there's something he was, about...
He was played by Roddy McDowell, I want to say, in the 1966 Batman.
There's something about Jervis Tetch in the cartoon that's unique to the animated series. I thought it was his existence, but I am wrong.
I think it was. I mean, like they added a lot of depth to the character.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it was fleshing out characters like the Mad Hatter.
Yeah. I also believe I am wrong though that I don't think that he was played Mad Hatter. I don't know who played the Mad Hatter. God damn it. Who was Roddy McDowell?
It
was David Wayne. Roddy McDowell played the character in the Batman the Animated Series.
Ah, okay.
Yes, but he was, and Roddy McDowall played the bookworm in the 1966 Batman. I just found that out because I was like, I don't think it was Roddy McDowall. That doesn't look like Roddy McDowall, but no, it is David Wayne.
It's Calendar Man.
Yes, Calendar Man.
Someone suggested someone proposed that they're going to use the Condiment King in the new Batman movies.
Oh yeah, the darker Batman, the darkest Batman,
the darkest Batman, which apparently is really good. People say it's really, really good.
Yeah, you know what though? Those are the same people who really like the Snyderverse. So I'm iffy on it. You know,
who fucking knows? This is a comic book movie. The last comic movie I saw that I really thought was good was the Suicide Squad.
Why don't we have Brave and the Bold Batman? Why can't I get Diedrich Bader in the bat suit talking about the Fist of Justice?
Okay, so I have you seen the Harley Quinn cartoon?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that is the Harley Quinn cartoon is the Brave and the Bold, but like
adult. Yeah.
Adult. Because it's literally like it's the same vibes, like it's just as silly. It has Diedrich Bader as Batman. It has like it is the Brave and the Bold, but for adults, 100%. So I really like it for that, because when I was first I started watching that cartoon, I was just like, this is really good. And I love the characterization of King Shark in there. Like
that Ron is Funch's King Shark.
Ron Funch's King Shark is amazing. It is a highlight every episode he is in. I love it. It's like, is that a shark joke? Because if so, that is very funny.
That is really funny.
Yeah, it was so good. Yeah, I fucking love that. That show is really good too. And then the Joker's the fucking guy from
wait, who?
Mr. The Joker. It's voiced by Mr.
Oh, yeah, it's Wong from Firefly.
Yes, I was trying to think of the villain he played in the show with Mr. Robot, with Brendan Fraser Bot.
Oh yeah, Mr. Nobody and
Mr. Nobody
in Doom,
in Doom Patrol. Doom Patrol, yeah. Right? Yeah, Mr. Yeah, he's
Alan
Tudyk, he was great.
Is his name
Alan Tudyk? That's right. Yeah, he was like he was one of the, or he maybe was the actual best part of that show. His narration was super good. That was sorely missed when I was watching some of season two.
Yeah. I do recommend the Harley Quinn cartoon. If anybody has HBO Max, it's on there. I'm hoping that third season drops soon.
It's very funny. It is very funny.
Yeah. I also to throw it out there, as long as I'm throwing out TV shows, is the second season of Close Enough just dropped this week. So.
Oh, did it? Nice.
Or the third season. I don't know. Whatever season they're on now.
Oh, I'm watching the fuck out of that.
Started it last night. But I'm pacing myself because I feel that when one marathons any show, they get less and less out of it.
I have because I've been watching almost everything now while only running or walking on the treadmill, it has allowed me to really space my consumption of media, and I've been enjoying things a lot more.
Yeah, that's as I say, I only watch Stargate SG-1 while I'm running. So
your gods aren't real. Here's guns. Go kill them.
Your gods aren't real. Here's guns. Go. We can't interfere with a pre-warp technology. SG-1 comes in, throws a flashbang grenade through the fucking Stargate. People, they're like, who do you worship? Who the fuck do you worship? And they're like, we don't have a god. All right, can we be friends? Can we trade technology? You don't have any technology? Peace out.
All right, see you later. Here's a Snickers bar.
I do tend to feel like that's totally like how we would interact as a society. Our Earth, a Stargate.
America? Yes, absolutely. Our Earth's America, absolutely. We'd be kicking in the door, ready to bring freedom. We'd be like, hey, this place got oil? No? All right, we'll see you later. Here's some Snickers. And one guy's like, Bonnie Way.
Bonnie Way. How can we build a pipeline through the Stargate from this world?
Yeah, we've got to figure it out.
That would just what they would do. They would just have a big pipe going into the Stargate on one end and a big pipe going at the second end. And that's it. That would just be the use of the Stargate, pumping oil from one world to another world.
Yes, absolutely.
Because why not? That's exactly what would happen. All right. So do we have any other gaming news to talk about?
There's a bunch of wild card game Kickstarters out there, like the Sorcery TCG. I don't know if you saw anything about this game.
No, I don't. The Sorcery? Is it like the Sorcerer, mm-hmm. the William Friedkin movie?
It's called Sorcery TCG.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with the William Friedkin movie.
Okay.
Unfortunately for us all. But it is a Magic the Gathering clone.
Ooh.
However, it is a Magic the Gathering clone circa 1994.
It totally is. I'm looking at it right now. I'm like, the second I saw it, I was like, if it had borders, this would look just like fucking Magic back when I remember Magic.
Yes. So it's like,
The art's really nice on there.
Yes. That's just the art is like all hand painted, old school looking. The rules text is stupid sounding. It has a board based plaything. Oh. So it's like, it's kind of like got like a quasi minis, like tactical movement, but it's a card game. I mean, it looks fine. I don't really like that. It appears to be, like going so crazy on Kickstarter. I don't know if anyone is going to like actually, it's one of those things where like, it's so big on Kickstarter. I find that like there's that
Shit, it made $6 million. Well, New Zealand dollars. Yeah. So I don't know how much it's in real dollars.
I think it's like $4 million in USD. I think New Zealand is like it's like Australian where it's like their dollars are just less than the US dollar.
So let's see. It's New Zealand dollars. So $6 million New Zealand dollars is, I believe, 3 tactical Space Marine sets.
It's true.
Let's see, NZD to USD.
My guess was $4 million.
Your guess is $4 million. That could be correct. Let's see. It is. Well, why isn't it translating now? Come on.
Come on, let's go.
I think I want to win. I think this is the
big win.
Yeah, it's not working right now. I don't know why.
No!
But it's about 70 cents on the dollar, so.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't know what that translates to USD, but we'll figure it out eventually. Maybe it's because I put commas in there.
You can't put commas.
Oh, there we go. It is. Yeah, it's about 4 million.
Yes.
3.9.
Nice.
So you're right on there.
Look at me, global citizen.
So when you need to buy an alpine parakeet, you know how much your dollar goes for. I don't know what else can you buy in New Zealand that we could import. Can we import anything that's like impressive just only from New Zealand?
Cool pictures of glowworms, Lord of the Rings memorabilia.
Yeah, I'd say the Lord of the Rings memorabilia would be a big one. But I think you could get that pretty much anywhere.
But this will say made in New Zealand and it'll be from New Zealand, so it's a little different.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Any of our New Zealand listeners, you can feel free to comment on our Facebook page about what we could buy from New Zealand that we could only get in New Zealand.
Like, I bet you that there's a good fruit. I bet you that there's a fruit that is good in New Zealand from New Zealand. You can get the freshest one from. Guarantee
I'm sure. Like, aren't kiwis from New Zealand? Am I just imagining? Am I just assuming that because they're called kiwis in New Zealand?
You know, I always thought they were called kiwis because of the kiwi bird, not the fruit.
Yeah, but isn't the kiwi bird from New Zealand?
The kiwi bird is from New Zealand. Yes, I don't know if the kiwi fruit is also from New Zealand.
Oh, there you go. But I'm sure like every country has their own form of cheese, so I'm sure you could find out some sort of New Zealand cheese.
Yeah, and also I guarantee you whatever's grown there, because like I mean the difference between having like the fresh grown fruit, like I mean I love fruit and like fruit is fine transport, it's fine frozen, you know, there's no other, but like when you have that like this piece of fruit was like ripened and picked today and you taste that fruit, it's unmatched. Like you can't have that experience. So whatever, if kiwis are from New Zealand, I guarantee you the best kiwis you'll ever have are in New Zealand.
Well, it says kiwis are native to central and eastern China. They were very popular amongst British and American servicemen stationed in New Zealand during World War II.
Oh, that's interesting.
In New Zealand during the 1940s and 50s, the fruit became an agricultural commodity through the development of commercially viable cultivars, agricultural practices, shipping, storage, and marketing.
Hey, there you go. So it's not from New Zealand, but it is currently from New Zealand.
Yeah. So nice. And then I guess it was the World War II racist guys who were just like, we like these kiwis. We're going to call New Zealanders kiwis.
I thought it was because of the bird.
I guess. I don't know. Well, I bet you the bird is named after the fruit more than anything.
Probably because they look like it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I love kiwi birds. They're so fucking cute.
Yeah, they're useless.
How dare you? How dare you? They're adorable and cute. You want to talk about useless? We got humans. That's useless.
So, anywho, back to Sorcery, the Contested Realm, as a New Zealand game. It's made $6 million New Zealand dollars, $4 million U.S. It does. It looks like an old school Magic the Gathering game.
Yes. I was saying my concern is that the response is so big. It's one of those like there is some intangible value of where you want your Kickstarter to like land, because I believe the polls are the danger zone. So like if the Kickstarter doesn't make enough or too much, you are in the danger zone. You have to hit that like sweet ball. And a game that's a card game that's that high, it's a concern of mine.
Danger zone.
Thank you, Kenny Loggins.
Kenny Loggins. The man who also brought us Footloose. So like was 130 US, you got a booster box with 36 packs. For 50, you get the pre-constructed decks. It's not bad. And then for For 750, you get a booster case, which is six boxes.
Yeah, it's normal CCG price. That's pretty much industry standard.
Is this gonna go the same way as some of the other claimants to Magic's throne, like what was the one that you liked a lot? Not Keyforge.
Force of Will.
Force of Will. Yeah. Is this gonna end up like Force of Will?
Who knows?
Yeah. Because I remember you, Force of Will started off really strong, but then it's just like a bunch of bad decisions by the designers just ended up costing that game its seat. Yep.
They basically had the biggest shot at like becoming the number two to Magic, because that's where you want to be. Like you want to be the number two, because like you can't be the number one. Magic is just like it's kind of impossible to dethrone Magic. Like it's not going to happen.
Yeah,
you can become a number two. You become a strong number two, and a strong number two is like still a ridiculous moment. But yeah, that game had the best shot, but they just punted it right into the ground.
Yeah, because I think the strong number two right now is Pokemon, right? That would make sense.
Pokemon's a different animal. Pokemon, I actually don't consider when I'm talking about card games, when I'm talking about selling card games, because if you consider Pokemon, Pokemon's number one. Pokemon's number one by like by a commanding margin. But there's several factors to this that I want to point out that why I don't count Pokemon in the conversation. One, Pokemon the franchise is the biggest franchise of anything ever. It's the highest grossing franchise of anything ever made. It's number one. So that's the first thing. Like you cannot dethrone something that's just that big. Two, the Pokemon TCG specifically, the amount of people who buy it versus the amount of people who play it is like a comical pyramid, upside down pyramid.
Yeah.
Like people who play it is are the very tip of the pyramid. People who buy it are the base and the foundation of the pyramid by like a ridiculous margin, because you'll have a guy who's like I sell like 50 cases of Pokemon a week. Wow, that's so much Pokemon. You must have a lot of players. I get three people showing up to try and play games.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So let's say Yu-Gi-Oh, maybe.
Yeah, I'd say number two right now is Yu-Gi-Oh for sure.
Okay, so the number two after Magic in terms of player base is Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yeah.
So you'd have to somehow beat that out, and I don't know if you could do that with a Magic clone. It's kind of like
Force of Will took so many Yu-Gi-Oh players, it wasn't even funny. Yeah. It grabbed that's the thing. The reason Force of Will was so popular is because it had enough from each genre of appeal that it got everyone. It got people who were into Magic to try it, got people who were into Pokemon to try it, people who were into Force of Will to try it, or Yu-Gi-Oh to try it. Like everyone kind of got peeled off because there was something that made it good, because it had the good gameplay of Magic, but it didn't have getting mana screwed, because the your land was separate from your deck. So every turn you could just put a land from your land deck into play. So you never got in a situation where you didn't get to play the game.
Yeah, there you go. And so you have to take that into consideration with Sorcery. I mean, it's not going to kill you to drop let's say $100 and $200 to get a booster and a pre-made
deck. I think grabbing it and like throwing it on your shelf to look cool, or put it in an old ass binder, like I think that'd be neat. Because like I said, it looks like a game right out of 94.
Yeah, and well, what I'm just saying is, it's not going to kill you to spend $200 on a game that you probably can play a couple times. I'm sure you'll be able to play it. It might not have lasting power, but you can actually get a couple good games out of it. You know?
Yeah, the game looks pretty fun. I mean, it looks very game. So like,
also I don't have. What's also important about it is it has a booster box, so that you get the dopamine from opening the cards.
That's right. You get to crack the packs, baby.
You get that sweet, sweet brain juice.
That's right. We want to crack those packs.
Exactly. Anything else? That's a good one. That one was off my radar, but usually card games are off my radar. Because I don't play them.
Sorcery TCG is pretty dope. What else? I think all the other Kickstarters I was following are over, closed. If anyone else bought the Studio X, I salute you and myself in our waiting period. Please don't be too mean to them. I know how logistics is right now, so like they're dealing with a lot of shit.
That Call of Cthulhu Kickstarter still on, and it's like it shipped. It's literally slow boating its way to what like the distribution centers, and it's like it was originally supposed to deliver in February, and it's probably not going to deliver to May now. So it's not. It's not terrible. It's not Kingdom Death terrible, but it's still pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean that's like people like really like if you don't understand how bad logistics is, like goddamn, just look up shipping container price. Just look up shipping container price if you really want to know why all of your stuff is taking so long, or why stuff is out of stock everywhere, or why you're getting gouged on some item. Just look up shipping container price. Like if you look that up and you look at just look at the track of how of the price over the last 2 years, and you'll be like, oh, I see. And then maybe, you know, I doubt any of our listeners are like malding posting in a Kickstarter, but you know, just in case. Don't.
I mean, you know what we don't have time for? I would maybe next time I'll go over it, but I'm writing a Call of Cthulhu scenario that I'm going to be running in a campaign. I'm actually going to do a serious RPG, a no joke RPG.
Nice.
Not no joke as in like no joke, it's going to be an RPG, but it's like, I'm not going to have any character named Thurston Thumbbutt, you know.
You're not gonna do your standard of like swiggle soggy bottoms.
Yeah, like there might be a Lord Soggy Bottom, but I would prefer in my Call of Cthulhu game. It's what makes this unique is I'm actually writing it out as an actual scenario or an actual campaign. Like they actually write the campaign books for Call of Cthulhu, so I'm using that as my guide to write it out. And I'm actually having quite a bit of fun. My problem is that I need to create more mousetraps is what I need to do because I feel like I'm blowing through the story too quickly and not giving enough. Like, you know, you attempt to read this letter and all of a sudden you've summoned, a rat demon thing.
Oh, yeah. I think the best, I mean, you could do whenever I do a story for any campaign, what I do is I do the story. I finish the story and then I go back and add the pitfalls.
You know, that's kind of what I'm doing. And I'm kind of in my head. That's what I'm thinking as I'm writing it. No spoilers for anybody. I don't think anybody on this will be listening, will be playing in the game. But like, for example, there's a scene where they're walking through a museum and then they find this big statue. And on the back of the statue, there's some writing. And if they attempt to read it, read it successfully, they fucking get transported to this crazy fucking dream thing where they're being like passed through mouths of several different demons back and forth.
Nice, let's go.
But it's all in their head, so when they're able to be snapped out of it, they have to, you know, of course, roll for sanity.
Nice.
Normal stuff. That's what I just kind of feel like in my head when I'm writing this. It's that your whole thing is, how do I avoid losing sanity points but still progressing the story? Like, that's just kind of how you have to write Call of Cthulhu.
Yes. Actually, speaking of Call of Cthulhu and games, I don't know if I've ever talked about it on here before, but there's this computer game called World of Horror.
Yeah, you talked about that before.
Did I? Okay, yeah, it's on Steam, on GOG, everything. You should play it. If you haven't played it, you should. It's not expensive. The look is amazing. The sound is amazing. The game is amazing. It is one of my absolute favorite video games. I started playing it again recently. They did a little bit of a stealth update, and they put in new stuff. I cannot recommend that game strongly enough. I think everyone should give it a shot. If you like Lovecraftian / Junji Ito / like just horror fan in general, especially if you also happen to like old computer games, you should play it. It's so good.
Did you listen to that podcast I sent you?
No.
The Lovecraft one. Remember I was saying it was like the best interpretation of
Yeah. It's on my list. I have not listened to it yet. No.
Yeah, I found it. It's a BBC podcast. Recently, because I was actually looking for a Call of Cthulhu live plays just to kind of get like the feel down for what I liked, and I didn't find too many that I was like, oh, this is great. Like most of them are not. The problem with live play podcasts is that some of them are either too long and drawn out, like they don't keep it going, or they tend to what's the thing? It's like they're just like recorded horribly, so it sounds like you're listening to it in a dry clean, in a like a laundry washer or something, yeah, like that, or yeah, a dryer. Yeah, so that's always my bigger problems with that. I'm looking up the podcast right now. I believe it's called The Lovecraft Investigators. It's a BBC audio drama. The Lovecraft Investigations is what it is. It's probably the best simplistic streamlined version of the Cthulhu mythos that I've ever heard. Like the way that they line it out and they explain it, how the mythos works, it's like, oh, you know what, that's never been explained to me, now I get it.
Yeah, I was annoyed because it was not, I remember being annoyed because it was not on Google Podcasts for some reason.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's on Apple Podcasts, and I think it's on Spotify, which I don't know if you have either of those.
I only have Google Podcasts,
but I picked it up because I was like, someone had recommended it in a thread of like Cthulhu Lovecraftian podcasts. Mm-hmm. They were like, this isn't necessarily a live play, but it's kind of like an audio drama of it, and I actually really liked it. Second and third season kind of fall into a pit, like a very common trap, and I don't want to go into it because it would spoil it for a lot of people, but the first season is really, really good. I really enjoyed it. Very Lovecraftian.
Cool. I'll have to give it a shot.
That, you go to Game Classy Facebook page is the best way you can help out the podcast. You can like, comment, subscribe on iTunes, like, comment, subscribe on the YouTube. If you could, you could also follow Steve at underscore command throw, or command underscore throw. Which one?
That's right. Command okay. Underscore throw.
Command underscore throw. And you could follow me on the Instagram at Game Classy Joe. Aside from that, Steve, though, is until next week or next time.
I believe my plan will be excellent to destroy the Batman.
Later.
Later.
Game Classy.